Book of the Week with Claire Armistead on guardian.co.uk.
My guest today is Richard Williams, sports writer, one-time film critic, and now the author of a new book, The Blue Moment, which could be described as a love letter to a single jazz recording, Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. That was So What from A Kind of Blue. Richard, I came away from The Blue Moment thinking that those two chords that you heard in that extract were as iconic as the ones at the start of Beethoven's Fifth. Is that an overstatement?
I wish I'd thought of that when I was writing the book. They are, it's absolutely right.
What are the chords, out of interest? C major 7th and G9, could it be?
If that's what it says in the book,
that's what it is.
They are. They sort of summarise something that Miles Davis was trying to do at the time, which was to move away from the harmonic complexity of jazz as it had evolved.
What was that point? What time are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about the 1950s. So really we're talking about the era of the music of Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, bebop, which was based on harmonic and rhythmic complexity. And it was a kind of athletic contest, in a way, an intellectual and athletic contest. You had to know more about the harmonies than the next guy, you know, if you were going to make progress. And if you didn't have the key to it, then it was very difficult to enjoy. And I think Miles Davis felt out of tune, really, with this increasing harmonic complexity. He was a very sophisticated musician and a very sophisticated man, but he really wanted something that offered him the chance to stretch out and explore in a way that he couldn't do when he was confined by the limits of the 32-bar Broadway song or the 12-bar blues, which was what musicians basically played on in the 1950s.
This came out of it sounds rather glamorous, this flat in a basement in Manhattan that they all hung out in the 1950s.
Yes, there was an apartment on 44th Street in New York, and that apartment was the home of an arranger called Gil Evans, who was a friend of Miles. Miles was very young then. This was late 40s, so he was only, you know, 20, 21, 22. But a lot of other musicians congregated in that apartment. Charlie Parker, John Lewis, who went on to found the Modern Jazz Quartet, Jerry Mulligan. But George Russell, it was a conversation he had with Miles one day that really sparked the whole thing off. Russell also was looking for different ways to approach jazz in harmonic terms. And one day, he was actually recovering from tuberculosis, and Miles went to visit him, and they had a conversation about harmony. And Miles said, you know, I want to learn all the chords. I want to be able to play on all the chords. What he decided was that he should go back to the very roots of music, to, you know, Greeks, ancient Greeks, and even before that, when instead of chords, they used scales, they used modes, which was a group of notes, five notes, each one could be said to create a particular kind of mood. Anyway, Russell was inspired by that. He went away and developed a thing he called the Lydian chromatic concept of tonal organization. But some musicians, including Miles, you know, were very influenced by his thoughts. And Kind of Blue actually came out of Miles's refinement of what Russell had been
conjuring up. So then we get to the studio in 1959, and it's 2 days. Yep. Of sessions, yeah. And out of that comes this piece of music. Just describe what that must have been like.
Well, Miles had a working sextet, and they played basically a kind of standard repertoire. They played, you know, Broadway songs like Stella by Starlight or My Funny Valentine. But for this record, Miles had conceived something very different. He brought Bill Evans back for a start. Evans had left the group because he felt unhappy about being the only white player in the group. He'd been getting a bit of criticism from, you know, he'd been hearing criticism from outside the band, not inside it. So anyway, Miles brought Evans back, and he'd created these five pieces, a couple of which Evans had contributed to, which were based not on the 32-bar popular song, but on much, much simpler materials on scales. There's one piece, for instance, called Flamenco Sketches, in which the soloist is given five scales and you work through one after another, taking as much time as you want with each one. It's entirely at the player's discretion. Also, the record had a different kind of intensity from the others he'd been making. It was much more reflective, much more introspective, much more subdued. And in that way, it was much truer to the sound of Miles's own playing, which had always been different from other trumpet players. It didn't have any kind of bravura quality about it. It was, you know, it was a kind of sound of introspection, really.
It wasn't instantly appreciated, this record, or it certainly wasn't recognised as important as it has come to be. Tell us a bit about the contemporary response to it. I know that Kingsley Amis was rather contemptuous.
Yeah, Kingsley Amis heard Miles around that time and said, "I've heard The Future of Music and it sounds horrible." A lot of more traditional jazz critics didn't like what Miles was doing. Philip Larkin referred to the passionless creep of a Miles Davis solo. Well, there was a man who knew a few things about passionless creeps.
But Kenneth Tynan's daughter, aged 9, was incredibly perceptive about it, wasn't she?
Yes.
The sound of a little boy who's been locked out
outside,
and wants to get in.
That's right.
You get a better description of melancholy than that?
Absolutely wonderful. Tynan loved Miles, wrote about him quite a lot. It was warmly reviewed when it came out, generally, by, you know, the more sympathetic critics. But it wasn't seen as being anything very different at the time. But it certainly did that. The minimalist composers, the young minimalists in California, Lamont Young, Terry Riley, Steve Reich, they were students at the time. And Kind of Blue was a thing that they listened to a lot. And, they were trying to find a way to make classical music that had nothing to do with 12-tone music. And what Miles was proposing with this record really, really struck a chord with them.
So when did you come in thrall to Kind of Blue?
I had Kind of Blue when I was about 14, I think, which would have been about a year after it came out. I was lucky, really. I grew up with good listening habits. So, I played in classical orchestras when I was a kid, and I played in skiffle groups, and I played in rhythm and blues groups, and I listened to all those different kinds of music. But Kind of Blue did make a particular impact on me then.
Immediately?
I know that I recognised it as being something different, that it was clear that it was a distillation of something, that all the kind of extraneous stylistic mannerisms of jazz had been thrown away, and here was something... Well, distilled is the best word for it, refined, something very clear, very pure.
Mm. Now, this is not only a book about this particular piece of music, it's also about where it came from and what it has subsequently led to. And this, you deal with that particularly and also in general. And if we're taking the particular, you talk a lot about the existentialists, who, of course, Miles Davis had first-hand contact with, intimate contact with in some cases.
When he was very young, in the late 40s, Miles went to Paris to play at the jazz festival. Luckily for him, he met Juliette Greco backstage, and they fell in love. It's a sweet story, they really did. Miles was a middle-class black man from St. Louis, and he'd gone to the Juilliard Academy in New York, you know, so he was a sophisticated...
And he was an orchestral principal trumpeter as well, wasn't
he? Well,
he
could do that, yeah, when he was, a student, he did that. Yeah. So he was a sophisticated man, but, Paris was different for him. Paris was the first time where he hadn't felt the draft of racism, and it was a revelation. And to be able to walk around the streets of a capital city hand in hand with a white woman was, in 1949, something exceptional for him.
He was married at the time, wasn't he? Unfortunately.
Yes, he was, yes.
He wasn't a rat, was he? I mean, she talked fondly of him afterwards.
She did. She introduced him to Sartre and Boris Vian and all the sort of left-bankish people, and he hung out at the Café de Flore and so on and loved it. But in the end, he had to go back to New York because New York was where jazz was where the future was. And he knew that there was no point in trying to take Greco back because life would be different.
And there's a suggestion in the book that maybe that some of the melancholia comes from that parting.
I think it had a really profound effect on him, you know, more profound than just the fact that for years afterwards he played Autumn Leaves, which is a song that he would have heard her singing at the time. It was one of her, you know, great songs.
Mm. Now, you also have a chapter on the meaning of blue. Why he chose that word and what it's meant.
Well, I just got interested in kind of blue. It's an interesting phrase, you know. And I discovered that the Greeks and Romans didn't actually have a word for blue. The Romans despised it. They saw Celts and Germans wearing woad.
And with blue eyes.
And with blue eyes, yes, blue eyes. They thought blue eyes was a sort of deformity. And the Greeks didn't have a word for it, which probably explains why Homer had to reach for the phrase wine dark sea, because he, you know, didn't have a shade of blue.
Fascinating.
Maybe.
But so what did blue mean at the particular moment at which kind of blue was made?
Oh, melancholy, I think, a kind of sophisticated, civilised melancholy.
Definitely not the first book to have been written about this recording.
No, two books have been written about Kind of Blue before, and they're very good books. Ashley Kahn, who wrote The Making of Kind of Blue, went back into the Columbia Records archives and found the original master tape and listened to it and found the invoices for the studio fees and, you know, how much the musicians were paid, all that sort of thing. Very, very accomplished book and very interesting. I was trying to do something else. I was trying to work out how Kind of Blue led to Roxy Music, the Velvet Underground, the kind of European jazz associated with the ECM record label, Keith Jarrett, Jan Garbarek, that kind of thing. Some of the things that are happening in very avant-garde music in Norway at the moment, for instance, all sorts of things going on. And you can trace all these things back to what Miles Davis did in 1959.
So in a way, it's an answer to Alex Ross's book, The Rest is Noise, which was published last year, which argued that it was a classical lineage.
Yes, it was partly classical. You know, there were certainly classical influences. Gil Evans, who I mentioned earlier, was very influenced by Fauré, Defire, Cachaturian, Ravel, and he played those records to Miles. But I thought that Alex Ross, in his wonderful book, didn't really deal adequately with the kind of development that I've been talking about and which has affected the music that is around us, I think, more profoundly than the classical tradition of the 20th century.
Even though jazz itself is actually very unpopular at the moment.
Yeah, it's not exactly unpopular, you know. You go into a bookshop or a pizza restaurant and you're quite likely to hear a Coltrane record or a Miles Davis record in the background, so you can't say that's unpopular. It's not thought to be on the edge of things in the way that it was in the 1950s when it stood for, you know, something, stood for progress and being a bit of an avant-gardist. But it's still evolving in a very interesting way, and it's still affecting a lot of musicians working in more popular fields. There's no doubt about that. You know, a lot of people like Radiohead, for instance, you know, they're very, very affected by the music that has come out of Kind of Blue.
If you were to name two of the sons or daughters of a Kind of Blue for people to look at, people like me who only own Keith Jarrett's Cohen concerts and a Kind of Blue.
I'd point you to the Velvet Underground, which might seem unlikely because you could put a Velvet Underground record on and then put Kind of Blue on and think, what have those two got in common? Well, what they've got in common is John Cale, who was the Velvet Underground's electric viola player and pianist and sometimes bass guitarist, and who introduced to rock music through the Velvet Underground the kind of repeated ostinatos, which did away with chords, you know, did away with chord sequences, the kind of things that he'd picked up from his work with Terry Riley, with Lamont Young, the California minimalists, and thus really transmitting to another idiom what they'd picked up from Kind of Blue.
Mm.
So that would be one, you know, something like All Tomorrow's Parties by the Velvet Underground with its hammered piano. It doesn't sound anything like Kind of Blue, but it sure is, an inheritor of it. And I'd also point to Brian Eno's ambient music for airports, that sort of thing. which he invented as a kind of creative response to the sterility of Muzak. Brian didn't hear Kind of Blue when it came out, but he knew about Miles Davis. But he really absorbed all this, like John Cale, through the minimalist composers. He absorbed the idea of timelessness, of space, of reflection, at one remove. But it's a definite link.
Well, Richard, I'll definitely be brushing down my iPod, adding some new things to it. Just as a postscript, one intriguing fact that emerges from the book was that it was actually recorded at the wrong speed.
Half of it was. One of the two sessions, the whole thing was recorded less than 9 hours in 2 days, a few weeks apart. And at one of the sessions, the tape machine was running slightly at the wrong speed. Now, they used two tape machines, one to make a copy for safety purposes to put in their vault for the archives, and one to use as the master copy. And the one that they made the master copy on was just running a fraction out of time.
So until 1993, we've been listening to the wrong thing.
A hair wrong. I mean, I think it's possible to make too much of that, but it's true. And they'd finally corrected it, and the one you would go into a shop and buy now would have the right speed.
Thanks very much for coming in, Richard. And
thank
now
you,
to
Claire.
End, why don't we listen to one of the tracks that was indeed recorded at the wrong speed, but is now being corrected, Blue in Green.